Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked on Cavs. Coming up on today's show, we had a fun conversation with Brittany Mollis from the That's What Beach It podcast. Evan and I talked to her about a whole bunch of other Cavs things. She'll be back later this week for another episode. But without further ado, here's today's show.
You are Locked on Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked on Podcast Network.
With the 8th pick in the 2018 NBA Draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton from the University of Alabama.
2 years ago, you were an unranked high school player. Now you're a lottery pick. What does that mean?
It just shows all my hard work paid off. I just grinded from starting at the bottom and came back up to the top. That was the biggest thing, just to show people what I can do.
Off and lobs to look. It was guarded by Grant Williams. Good feed to Sexton inside. Lays it up and lays it in. Sexton now has 26.
Joining us now, we're very excited about this one, is Brittany Mollis, one of the hosts of the That's What Be Said podcast. We're going to have her on for two episodes. One, where we're going to talk about Colin Sexton. And number two, where she's going to ask us a bunch of questions. Evan and I are going to turn over the controls of the podcast for that one. But Brittany, thank you so much for coming on. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing good. Evan, how are you today? How are you doing on this Monday?
Well, it's Monday. I don't know, man. You caught me at a weird time. Chris, you know what's going on behind the scenes and why I'm annoyed. So.
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, that's going without saying. But other than that, I'm just great. It's a beautiful day outside. Got a good run in. So, can't complain too much.
Health is important. Mm-hmm. Health is very important. I have not been, just been the chill and not doing anything by it. But let's just get into Colin Sexton. I don't think there's any better place to start than a tweet the Cavs social media account sent out on Monday with the Cavs Mount Rushmore. And Colin Sexton's on it. And look, like, I get that the Cavs don't have, like, a ton of necessarily, like, all-time great guys with the franchise. You're going to have some guys that have, like, spotty kind of records and stuff like that. I get you want to have someone like that's young and modern on the team. That's just like, I think just everything with Colin and everything with this is just like, my thing is everyone should just chill. Let's just like pump the brakes for a little bit. Let's not rush this. Let's like let Colin like win some games and do some stuff before we do this. I think about this. I don't even think the discourse around this, around Colin is like super broken, but it's not fun. And Brittany, I'd be curious, like, do you find the Colin Sexton discourse fun? Because I find it like very annoying to talk about Colin Sexton right now.
Listen, I should basically be Colin Sexton's PR person. I feel like half of my job on social media is just to defend and push out all the Colin Sexton content that people could possibly stomach, which they barely do. So I sort of got this reputation for just being a Colin Sexton fan, which I gladly accept. But as far as the Mount Rushmore thing, as big of a fan as I am of him, that was egregious. Even for, like, I looked at that and yeah. I was like, all right. But, you know, there are also, like, Anderson Varejao, I don't think should be on that.
Oh, no, Andy should be on there. Booby's the one. Booby Gibson's the one. I'm a little shaky on it.
Yes, I looked at that and I was like, all right. But my beef with Anderson Varejao was that I was such a, and still am, I can't say was, I'm such a Drew Gooden lover that, like, once Anderson, you know, it sort of made his job tougher and then he got pushed out and everyone was fine with it. So, you know, bad blood between me and Anderson Varejao, but still. That's so, fair. Yeah, as far as that goes, Colin Sexton, no, obviously. But, you know, Anderson Varejao too and Booby Gibson. Let's see if there's any other problems. No, all the rest are pretty okay, I think.
I have to look at the list now, too. Yeah, no,
it's a lot.
Yeah, I feel like Sexton is a little egregious. Andy could be worse. Chris and I are, you know, Varejao defenders. I think we're the last bastion of defending Anderson Varejao. So,
guys,
he helped me through a dark place of life after LeBron Part 1 before Kyrie showed up, so it's something. But Chris, I have to defend Colin here. He's won some games in his career so far. He won 19
not won
in his
a lot
rookie
of
year. He's won 19 in his sophomore campaign, so you can say for a fact before the season stopped he was at least consistent, so maybe that can get him some Mount Rushmore odds. But like everyone else in my Twitter mentions like to remind me, and they've broken me on this situation altogether, he was nominated for Eastern Conference Player of the Month every month this year.
Okay,
Chris.
Okay,
that's
hold
right
on,
that's
hold
right
on. Brittany, are you aware of how
are we gonna spill the tea? Are we gonna spill the tea on how?
Yeah, can we spill the tea? Do you know how those are? How those happen?
Do I want to know how these happen?
Yeah.
Are you going to break my heart?
The Cavs do it. This isn't like
they're the only ones who don't nominate Giannis. Like
Colin Sexton had a great week. Let's nominate him. It's the Cavs doing this week after week after week after week.
Yeah,
as they should. Who else? Okay, who else are you going to nominate?
You can't nominate Kevin Porter Jr. one time. You can't nominate Kevin Love like one. Tristan Thompson. Like, why is it every week? It's like Colin Sexton, Colin Sexton, Colin Sexton. There's just like a lot of weirdness with this.
There might have been a few weeks, especially like at the beginning of the year, where I was like, okay, Tristan Thompson, yes. Kevin Porter Jr., yeah, he had some good games. But, you know, Colin Sexton, I think this past year he has been, dare I say it, you guys are looking at me like I'm about to drop a bomb.
No.
Wasn't he kind of their best player?
Yeah, he's been the best player on the team.
He's the best player on the team. We agreed on this a little bit ago.
Okay. Ooh, look at us agreeing.
Yeah, look at that.
So you thought we were going to argue today.
No, I thought we were about to be like Colin Sexton would have done a better job. He would have won 7 titles with the 90s Bulls. He would have got Robin out of Vegas on time.
Listen, there did have to be a pandemic to stop Colin Sexton this year.
The pandemic stopped Colin Sexton scoring birds. That's true.
Exactly. He was starting to improve on assists too. The world was like, no, you don't.
We really have to question MJ's status as the GOAT because he never got to play against Colin Sexton.
when I tweet this out, that's the quote I'm going to use to share it for my followers.
It's fair.
Cheers.
So, I pitched this to Devin the other day, but I was listening. I cut like a different intro for this podcast in terms of the audio clips, and I went back and listened to his draft night introduction. Mm-hmm. And to me, when I listen to this, he's a number 8 pick. There's obviously the whole, like, wondering if the Cavs should have traded the year before we know what it is, the whole Kyrie trade. Like, this pick has had, like, a lot of loaded weight behind it before that. Mm-hmm. But we get to this pick, and he gets his media thing, and he asks, like, you know, you get the question about how you went from unranked prospect to top 10 pick, which is a good question, fair question, all that. And he answers that. And then he immediately gets asked a question about LeBron coming back to Cleveland.
See, that's what
and I feel like Colin, to no fault of his own, and I don't think he cares because I think Colin truly just wants to like work out and play basketball. He's literally just pushing sleds of weights around Atlanta right now. That's just like what he's doing for fun and playing Madden. This is, when you look at him, I think he just got put in this weird position where it's like he comes off the title run. He's theoretically the piece you would have traded for a title run, but he's also the most exciting thing in kind of a really weird time. And I think there's just like a lot on him in ways that's not fair. And I don't think that helps when we're like trying to like discuss him, because when I say like Colin Sexton needs to, like the vision needs to work and the defense needs to work, it's not like me being like he's trash. It's just like we're at the very beginning of this, and I don't he just comes in this really weird time, I think, and that contributes in a negative way. Is that a crackpot theory?
Yeah, so what I've always said about him, you know, in his defense, and when you guys asked me to go come on the show, I was thinking about, okay, how can I prove that Colin Sexton is a valuable player? And, you know, I was looking through stats. I was like, no, you know, screw that. I'm going to try and appeal to people's emotions. So here's what I laid out for everyone. Okay. So I think he was drafted into an impossible situation. He was like surrounded by the aftermath of the LeBron James era. And he wasn't a terribly popular pick, particularly with the fans. And, you know, that's a tough obstacle to overcome. You know, when people, they got used to winning, right? You know, with LeBron and that whole thing, they get used to seeing arguably the best player ever, in their uniform. And, you know, with that brings a certain comfort, and the fans almost in a way get spoiled. So they had to make this adjustment from having everything to having nothing. And that's not easy. And then when you talk about a rebuild, you have to remember it's a process. It takes time and mistakes are going to be made, and you know, the directions may change, as you've seen. You know, how many coaches has Colin Sexton had now? What is it? We're number 4 now?
Yeah. Right? Hopefully it's the 4th one and the last one.
Yeah, I hope so. But there really isn't an easy fix here. You know, but I also want to remind people that the process can be very exciting if they let it be. So you watch young players develop, and we get to see a team possibly come together from scratch, which is exciting. And, you know, there's something kind of very fulfilling about that, assuming that it does eventually pay off. So as far as Colin Sexton is concerned, I think the road ahead is what he makes it. You know, you can't ever knock him for his work ethic. I think
it's weird.
He just keeps trying to improve and get better all the time. And when he was drafted, you know, given his size and then the position changes and the adjustments and the challenges, he was a hard sell for a large portion of the fans. And, you know, they're not going to forget that. But, you know, I feel like he's fairly criticized for his shortcomings. But there are times when I feel like he's not given enough credit where it's probably due in, you know, terms of his improvements. And I would say that that's probably more true with him than anyone else on the team. So
I think that's very fair.
I think that's fair.
I think that's completely right, because you think about this. He comes in, can't shoot threes. Mm-hmm. Like, wasn't shooting threes, dribbled into three to, like, long twos and as opposed to corner threes, looked sort of lost, and also kind of got thrown to the wolves right away. But then every month he got better. And even this year, you had that December where he shot, like, 20% from three. He was above 40% the next month on higher attempts. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's right. I think Colin, I mean, if you look at just his jump from year one to year two, he was age 20 last year, has a value replacement of almost negative two, which is atrocious. And this year he's a positive. It's 0.1, but he went from like absolute crap to like a little above replacement level. And that's like a pretty sizable jump. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. And I think he also is in a, look, he's, I'm, this is a pro Kevin Love podcast. Kevin Love has not been a great adult in the room the last 2 years. He's been chucking balls and complaining and slapping chairs. And he's admitted that. But Evan, I mean, where are you at on this? What is your take on does Colin get too much flack for, even though he's doing, for not getting enough credit, rather, for the improvements he actually is?
Yeah, I think so. I think Brittany makes a good case, and just overall, like, especially the point that she made, and I should say you made that, and fans are spoiled in the fact that, let's be frank, this Colin Sexton pick was traded for Kyrie Irving, who is arguably the best point guard in franchise history, and he puts on Kyrie's number two, so it's a little bit of added pressure there in that regard. But, yeah, I feel like he gets a lot of flack just because fans are spoiled for the fact that Kyrie had such a huge leap from his rookie season to his sophomore season to his third season and so on, because, Chris, you and I were talking about this the other day. It's hard to believe that within 5 years after Kyrie was drafted, he was a champion. I don't think Colin Sexton's going to have that same career trajectory because LeBron's not going to be coming through anytime soon. But at the same time, like, I think he gets a lot of unfair criticism. And yeah, I think people just kind of get caught up in some of the more uglier things and more shocking things. Like you said, like, he wasn't shooting three-pointers and, like, his inability to make plays for a while. But, like, we were starting to see that turn as well, especially with JB becoming the head coach. Like, there is noticeable improvements that you can pull from both box scores and just the eye test alone that say Colin Sexton is definitely growing and developing and becoming a solid overall player. And I'm no longer going to put a ceiling on what he can be, because I feel like that's what ruffles people's feathers the most when it comes with my opinion on Colin. But I do think he's unfairly criticized, and I do think people need to appreciate how much he has improved just in the how terrible of a situation it was starting this rookie year with Ty getting fired and then just kind of getting thrown into the starting lineup with a coach that was asleep at the wheel for the moment he became the head coach and Larry Drew.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, talk a little bit about the rest of the Cavs discourse right after this.
Let me tell you about the most useful app on my phone. It's hard to find the time to sit down and read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you, who want to get to the main point of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library, from self-help, business, health, to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read, but never had time to. I like Blinkist because it helps me get to the key takeaways of a book in only 15 minutes so I can incorporate those learnings into my life immediately. Right now, for limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA and try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist. Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
And we are back here on Locked On Cavs. Okay, Brittany, I want to ask you this. The Cavs discourse, compared to, I think it's a little different and weirder than Browns Twitter is Browns Twitter. Indians Twitter is just yelling at the Dolans all the time correctly. And I'm sad about Yasop Puig potentially going somewhere else because the owners, whatever. When you think about the Cavs discourse, what is good about it? What is bad about it? When we actually talk about the Cavs, what do you think actually is like working in terms of how we're discussing the team? As Evan gives me like a very weird face.
There's nothing healthy about this discourse.
What's working? There's not too much that I can say is good about Cavs. Like, would you agree with that? Because it doesn't, as far as the fan base goes, it has to do with what I was talking about earlier. You know, I think we need to do a much better job of keeping things in perspective. Fans need to try to adjust how they view this post-LeBron era. And that applies to, like, you know, players, coaching, you know, ownership, Kobe Altman. It's an incredibly difficult task to try and get people excited for a team that once had the best and now doesn't. As a fan, it requires patience and understanding that it's not going to be how it was probably ever, but that doesn't mean it's going to be a disaster either. So, you know, it bums me out when I see fans angry at Dan Gilbert or fans who, you know, over-criticize everything, especially when it comes to certain players. I don't think these habits are really conducive to making this rebuild more bearable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know that there's like a whole lot of good, you know, some people try to get others excited about things. And like I said before, a rebuild can be very exciting if you let it be. There's something really cool about watching something come together from scratch. But unfortunately, I think it's going to take a little bit of time to get people on board. They're going to have to start seeing some sort of positive results before they come back and they want to enter the discussion in a positive, productive way.
I think that's right. Evan, what do you think?
Yeah. It's a lot to unpack.
That sigh.
It's a lot to unpack. The discourse around Cavs Twitter is just weird because there's a lot of people who don't want to let 2016 go. There's a lot of like people who are very sentimental with players, like, and Chris, you and I are both victims of this too. We're sentimental about Tristan. They're sentimental about Delly. They're sentimental about, I mean, I'll be upset when Kevin gets traded. Like, he was an asshole this season for the better part of the season, but like overall, like, had meaningful contributions to this team. There's a lot of people in that sector who don't want to let 2016 go. There's people that are incredibly impatient because the team won a championship 4 years ago, and now the Cavs are a bottom feeder in the NBA again, and they really don't have a direction. And I think people are still trying to wrap their head around that the Cavs are still in talent acquisition mode where they're just going to grab as many players that they think might work, and then they figure out where things fall as time goes on. Like Colin Sexton is like a figurehead of this discourse, obviously.
Yes.
And then there's like people who are super critical. Like, it's so weird that people are so tribal about either being Team Sexton or Team Garland. And I'm just like, why don't you just enjoy both of them? They both have their shortcomings, and they're 20 year olds that are barely experienced in like life itself, and let alone NBA basketball. Like, be patient about this. The Cavs aren't going to be a playoff team next year. They're probably not going to be a playoff team for 2 years, but it's just, and at the same time, like, I don't know. It's like, I can get you, like, you can sell hope to Cleveland fans. It's like, that's one thing in this economy that'll never go out in Cleveland sports is hope. So it's just weird. Like, it's just like a lot of weird sectors and cliques and everything. But like, I'm just here to have fun. And if people get frustrated at stuff that I say, like, that's fine. Like, we can talk about it, but we can just be civil. That's all I ask. Like, you don't have to name call. When people name call or make it like personal, I'm like, all right, well, it was fun. This conversation has no purpose anymore. So, what about
isn't
you,
that what
Chris?
Twitter is, though? People just name calling all the time.
Yeah, that's it. Right.
So,
like, Chris chastised me once because I had notifications turned on my phone, and he's just like, "Why do you do that to yourself?" I'm like, "Cause I want to know what people are saying."
That's right. Yeah, that's
I need validation for my opinions, and then I'm like, I don't want it anymore. So,
okay, here's one part of this that I think is very fixable, and it's not something that I think there's coverage of the some of the coverage of the team is weird. I think there are just people. I think there is something within the broader media establishment where the Cavs are like the awkward stepbrother you don't want to talk to. They're just like, let's just like talk about the Browns and let's talk about the draft. Like, even LeBron was back, you'd have people being like, I just want to talk about the NFL draft. We could make a conscious decision broadly to just be like, let's just prioritize this, talk about this, and kind of value this. I think that's a real thing that could be done. The other thing I would say is when I look at this from the Cavs perspective, they play a part in this because I look at how the Browns are approaching, like, the Browns, like, in, you know, it's obviously the draft or whatever. They were making Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry and freaking Paul D. Podesta very available via Zoom conferences. Mm-hmm. Like, you're getting every draft prospect that they picked is getting on a Zoom call with local reporters. You're getting interaction with these guys. I know nothing about Darius Garland. Besides the fact that he has a TikTok account and he plays video games and he, like, is signed to Clutch. Like, I don't know anything about him, and I cover the team. I'm sure people that are traveling with the team know a little more, but I don't feel like anyone really knows anything about him. But Kobe Altman hasn't spoken, like, in front of the media since, like, the John Beilein hire. We have not seen him. He didn't speak when Beilein said the slugs thing. He didn't speak. He did a conference call with us after the trade deadline, but, like, he doesn't.
The Drummond trade.
Right. He doesn't talk.
Even then, it was just flowery, waxing poetic about how great Drummond's going to be for the Cavs and would not entertain a negative question whatsoever.
No, that's right. But it's like, I think even right now, I've been trying to figure out how, like today on Twitter, on Monday, I was trying to figure out what other NBA teams have like done media availabilities and talking to other people I know and trying to figure that out. And it's like most teams have done this. Like it would not be that hard to like just get Darius Garland on a Zoom call with like Evan, me, Fedor, Kelsey Russo, Jason Lloyd, and like just let us pepper him with some questions about what he's doing right now, and like let's like explain your star young star player. Like it's not that hard to do, and I think there's value in that.
Rich would allow that though, because I feel like the Cavs would if we pestered him enough. But do you think Rich would allow that to happen?
No.
There you go. So that's my thing with Darius. If you could pull a different player out, maybe I'd entertain this. Okay,
Can I get Jetty? Can I get Dylan Windler? Can I get Kevin Porter Jr. like loves talking? Can I get Dylan Kevin Windler for 20 minutes about how he's like, does he still think Cleveland's like Seattle? Like, I just think you could do something as simple as that and like actually be like, here are the people we want you to come root for, buy our jerseys, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Like, just act like this isn't like national security. And I think it would be less weird. I think that's like a very simple fix. And there's, I don't think it's really much harder than that than just being like, these are actual human beings. Let's just talk to them. But the Cavs are very player protective. And it is, I think as their franchise, it is part of their brand to put up this wall to some degree and do this. And what other, like even the Warriors will be like, you want to talk to Steph Curry for 20 minutes? Sure. Like Raymond Ritter will hook you up.
Super accessible. Than
the Cavs don't do anything like that. And there's a purpose behind it.
It's definitely weird. And it's, I don't want to say stable organizations, but stable organizations are the ones that are most accessible because you and I have gone through this a few times, Chris, like Milwaukee, besides Giannis, they're the most accessible organization I've worked with. Golden State's super accessible. Utah's really good. Miami's easy to work with. Brooklyn can be hit or miss. The Lakers and the Clippers are great. Like they get back to you right away and they're like, yeah, we want to have a good working relationship with the media. And I hearken back to this, and it's kind of funny, because I remember when John Beilein was hired and he did his introductory press conference with Kobe, he said he wanted to have a good working relationship with the media. And I chuckled to myself when he said that, because I'm like, this team isn't going to let you have a good working relationship with the media. And, like, I agree. If they were a bit more accessible with us and just the fans in general, maybe just, like, what's going on and everything, and there isn't some, like, cryptic, like, and not, we don't know what's going on in the background or whatever, I think it would just make our jobs a lot easier, and I do think this discourse would go away a lot faster if we just kind of had a better idea of who and what is going on behind the scenes.
Who stands in the middle of it? Like, who is the, you know, obstacle to get by here?
I'm not naming names. Chris, you want to name a name?
The answer might be Dan.
Okay.
Yeah,
That's what I was asking. It's really my opinion.
Okay. It could be Dan. He's really weird about media access. I've been working on a story just to tease people with him and his people for a while now, and it's like moving heaven and earth just to get him on the phone for 5 minutes. So
I wonder why. Because he
a lot of it's the stroke, I heard. Like, he's super
okay.
He wants to control the situation. Like, he doesn't want to show any signs of weakness. But at the same time, he also likes to control the narrative as well. And if you ask questions that he might be uncomfortable with, he just won't flat out talk to you. So
I just feel like this is an easy way to, you know, get fans. Obviously, like, you know, fans in general of any sport are like hungry for any kind of content, right? And to me, like, this would be a good PR move just to get fans excited, interested, you know, because the NBA and the Cavs specifically, they sort of fell to the background behind everything. And, you know, doing something like this, it seems like a good idea to me. I don't understand what the holdup would be, why they would, you know, axe this idea.
I think there is something of, like, that they're trying to have players not have to do stuff they don't want to do. Like, they have so if you go in the Cavs locker room after a game, you walk right in, you hit the big span of lockers, but, like, they have, instead of having to walk, like, by anybody, there's a little, like, players lounge they can go out of and, like, avoid you. And most teams, like, they're not going to...
Yeah, more or less hide in.
Right. A lot of them will hide there. If you look at the issue, if you look at that, like, after a game, like, players are supposed to be there for a certain amount of time to talk to us. Now, I don't care, like... guys will leave, and there's certain, if it's like Ante's, there's just no shade, but it's just like, if he leaves, like, I'm good. He doesn't like talking anyway. He's the most quiet human being in the world.
Deli,
but guys will just leave, and then you don't get them. And, like, for weeks on a time, we will not hear from Garland. You'll hear from, like, it's like Sexton, Larry Nance, and Tristan Thompson, and Kevin are, like, the kind of the guys you regularly get with, like, a little KBJ. Mm-hmm. Clarkson was, like, a post-game every night guy when he was here. Mm-hmm. It just depends, and I think there is just, like, this, we're going to put certain guys up to talk. You're going to deal with that, and that's sort of how we're going to approach things. I mean, I think I would say if you look at Kobe Altman, David Griffin was very media friendly. Like, he gave a 40-minute interview to my predecessor boss at Fear the Sword, David Zavok, who's a blogger. Kobe Altman would not speak to anybody except for, like, Jason Lloyd right now. He won't. Oh. Or Chris Feeder, he won't. There's a very clear, to me, change in approach with Kobe, who's very much more in line with Dan than David was, and mm-hmm. I think some of the stuff we're seeing is, like, a conscious decision to move to something more like that. I really do.
And I think it's telling when the Pelicans are in town, because were we both at that game, Chris, or is it just me?
I don't remember, honestly. I don't remember anything.
I do remember being there because I showed up a little late, and Griff was walking around, like, in the lower section of Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Like, he was the big man on campus, and he was still running the show around there because, like, he's just, I don't know. It's just Kobe's MO. He does not like being accessible to the media. And if you kind of press the Cavs on it, they just give you a non-answer saying that's just how it is. And I don't really know where to go from here. But if this is the guy who's trying to be the architect of life after LeBron Part 2, I wish he was a little bit more accessible just to make our lives a lot easier.
Yeah, I think it's fair. All right, we're going to take one more break, come back, and talk about some storylines we're looking forward to seeing right after this. And we're back here on the Locked On Cavs podcast. Okay, we're gonna give me a storyline you're actually interested in. Let's non-Colin Sexton division. What is a Cavs storyline going into when the season comes back? When, if it's next season or whatever, what is something you're actually interested in and following?
Really, I think the thing that most people should be interested in and excited about, I don't know if it's a storyline as much as it is just watching things develop. I'm really excited about Kevin Porter Jr. and Darius Garland. And whoever the Cavs end up picking, you know, this summer, assuming that everything goes to plan and the draft is still there. I don't know anything anymore, but right? So, but yeah, like, I'm just excited to see those two specifically develop. And even more, like, Kevin Porter Jr., he seems to be the most intriguing player on the team to me, especially, you know, when we're talking about young guys. So that's what I'm most excited for. Also, it'll be interesting to see how the veteran players approach next year. Because, you know, I understand they were kind of put in a tough spot where they signed on to, I'm talking about, like, Kevin Love and Tristan and stuff, mm-hmm. signed on to win championships. And now, you know, the direction has totally shifted and LeBron left. Now they're there with, you know, all these young guys, and it's a rebuilding process. I'm interested to see how they handle it, if they want to handle it, if they don't. You know, that's another interesting part. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think?
I'm excited to see what the young core looks like for sure. I think Chris and I and Brittany, I don't know how you feel about this, but we're kind of hesitant to give a player grade on Darius Garland for the season just because we don't have enough to work with in terms of just what we expect and what we know from this player. Like, I think I did player grades for Forbes and I gave Colin Sexton an A+. I gave Larry Nance an A+ or an A, and Tristan Thompson got it. Like, those are the three best players on the Cavs, and like Kevin Love as well, but Kevin Love's personality docked him a few letter grades as well. So I'm excited to see what we get from Darius Garland, maybe after having a little bit of time to kind of get a feel for the NBA game, because it's a tired line. And if you listen to this podcast enough, I'm sure you've heard it enough to this point. He's a high schooler essentially playing with grown men after playing 5 games at Vanderbilt, and it really wasn't top tier talent he was playing against. So I'm curious to see with that. I agree with the Kevin Porter thing, but I'm more so interested in what Dylan Windler is going to bring to the table. He's going to be an old rookie next year, and from what Chris and I have heard, and I'm sure you've heard things as well and just read it, and we've all read it as well, like, the organization thinks the world of Dylan Windler, and they think he could be a huge difference player either starting or off the bench, because I can confirm what Jason Lloyd said, that the Cavs did envision maybe possibly starting Dylan at some point this season, and then the setbacks from his leg injury just definitely threw a wrench and all that. So I'm just kind of curious where he falls in the grand scheme of things, and he definitely helps Cleveland's wing depth problem, where, like, whenever Kevin Porter was hurt, Chetty was in one of his valleys instead of one of his peaks. It's just a nice little option to have as well for the Cavs going forward. And I'm not really sure. Like, I'm excited to see the young guys. I'm also kind of interested to see what the direction is going to be. The salary cap is expected to go down based on this whole pandemic situation. So likely more than likely, Andre Drummond and Kevin Love will be back next year. And kind of interested to see what the Cavs think their direction is, because Chris and I agree with this. This isn't sourced for everyone listening, but if JB and Colin are saying, like, the playoffs feel like they're within reach, that's probably an organizational thing where, like, everyone in the organization feels that way. And if that's the mantra, like, let's kind of figure out what we have here, because we have 2 all-star caliber players coming back. And then after that, you just kind of figure out what after that. So I don't know. What about you, Chris? What are you most excited for next season?
Truly, I can't even believe I'm about to say this. I truly just want to see how the Andre Drummond thing plays out. And I can't believe I've just said that, because, like, him launching threes is just, like, objectively insane. He's releasing a rap album this week, which I will not listen to. The only NBA player that should rap is Damian Lillard. Aaron Gordon's song about Dwayne Wade was bad.
I liked it. I thought it was
good. Aaron Gordon, just let it go, okay? Like, we get it. Just let it go, my guy. You drink wine. Cool. Don't care.
You're real.
Andre Drummond rapping just seems like the most pointless thing to me, because I watched him play 2K and Pat Beverly did all the talking and Drummond was like, oh man, and just, it was weird.
Did you watch that entire game, by the way?
I watched like a decent amount of it.
Okay, I mentally...
Pat Bev did all the fun talking. All of it.
Shout out to friend of the pod, Carter Rodriguez, who does like esports stuff. He's asking me how it went. I'm like, oh no, dude, I mentally checked out like 5 minutes in, because it was...
It's not good television.
Drummond's just kind of like quietly talking to himself and like,
yeah,
Bev's talking trash, and I'm like, this is boring, because Drummond was like absolutely dominating at first, and
I would watch Drummond play 2K again is if it was him and Joel Embiid in the same room, because Embiid and him have that history. Yeah. And I just enjoy Joel Embiid. I just want to see what they do here, because I don't know where you guys stand on this. Well, I have a better idea how Evan stands on this, but when I think about the Drummond we saw so far, it's not what you really want or really are hoping for in terms of the best version of him. So it is when they come back, is it next season, assuming he opts in, which is the likely option, like, what does he look like? And does it work with the Cavs? Do they flip him again? I just think how he works, considering he is someone that is very talented and all this stuff. Like, I do just wonder how that works, because there is probably, I would guess, some pressure on him to actually perform at a good level and try to earn money, because the Giannis is obviously the head of the 2021 free agency class. Let's say Giannis goes back to Milwaukee. There's suddenly a bunch of money available. Drummond's like not a lock to just immediately get paid. Like, he's not going to coast into another max contract. Like, he has to do stuff, but does it come within the context of the way that's also going to help Colin Sexton? Is it going to help Darius Garland? You know, is it with Kevin Love still around? Does it help if they draft, you know, LaMelo Ball or whomever, like in June? Like, does it help those guys too? That to me, he is probably the most kind of wild card thing. I don't know, but I think the most fun thing is just going to be the development of the young guys. I mean, the Cavs have never been a good franchise at really developing young guys. If you look back before, it was Kyrie and Tristan, and then they missed a lot. You know, I think Wendler will be good. I rode for Deion, but Deion was not, you know, Deion didn't work out.
Oh, I think we all rode for Deion.
But now you have Colin, who's good. Darius, who's shown some flashes. Kevin, who I'm very high on. And I think has been the most interesting rookie this year. I think Wendler will be helpful. And I think they're in a position, depending on who they draft, to get someone else that is also at least interesting. And, you know, you look at, do they do something with Dean Wade next year? Like, do they sign any under-the-radar guys using some money this summer just to kind of, if they just get someone on the scrap end and try to develop them? I think that's actually like a type of Cavs team we've never really seen in recent years, because the LeBron era was LeBron and a bunch of guys. Second era was then Kyrie and Tristan, the only quote-unquote young guys, and then you have Jetty in here too. And I want to, how these guys actually develop is going to be the most important thing. So I think those in concert together is probably, to me, the thing that kind of, I wonder how it all plays out, but it's also something that it's going to take, you know, 8, 9, 10 months a year for us to really see how that storyline really plays itself out.
Yeah. Just trying to think here. Brittany, do you have any idea of who you think the Cavs should draft this summer? If the draft does happen this summer or in the fall or whatever it does end up happening.
Here's my approach to the draft. And this is what I did with the Browns. And you know what, guys, it worked out really well. Now, okay. I understand that, you know, I'm a Kobe Altman fan for, you know, a variety of reasons. Again, I feel like much like, you know, Colin Sexton, the situation that he was brought into was difficult. You know, he had really, really big shoes to fill. David Griffin, he was so beloved by everyone that, you know, once he was gone, you know, Kobe, he not only did he have that pressure, but then I can't imagine that working with Dan Gilbert is an easy thing, being the middleman and the, you know, the fans and the organization. That has to be incredibly difficult. So, you know, I always feel bad for people who are brought into difficult situations. And I think that Kobe has been. I trust him. That's my bottom line here. I trust Kobe to make good picks. I trust him to do the right thing, which is how I felt about the Browns. Now, going into that draft, the NFL draft, I was like, all right, you know, people would ask me, who do you think they're going to take? Do you have any preference? And I was like, I have nothing. Like, there's not a part of me that researched anything, because you get so used to being disappointed about things that you just, the expectations are just not there anymore. So I have no idea who they're going to draft. I have no favorites, no preferences, just I'm putting my faith in Kobe. That's it.
Okay. I think that's fair. And it's a good way to go about it. As long as you, have faith in the man who's designing this team, I think we'll be okay. And I don't think I have much of an opinion either. And draft Twitter and NBA draft stuff's not my forte. And I bug people I know in that sphere to just pretend I'm an expert for whenever the draft actually happens. So by the time like the draft's actually coming around, I'll act like I'm an expert on somebody. But yeah, no, I think that's a good way to go about it. Just kind of have faith in the guy who is trying to build this team. So,
it's tough too, because a lot of times, you know, when you talk about draft, I'm not like a huge college basketball person, so I rarely watch it.
At least I'm not. It's
yeah. It's so not then you watch March Madness and you see these guys that you wouldn't normally see. And I was, you know, like with Ja Morant last year, I was like, oh, this guy's good, but like I didn't know about him until then. So without March Madness this year, it was really hard for me, a non-college basketball fan, to, you know, get a look at anyone that I might actually want. So that's actually helped me in this process of not having any expectations at all.
And there you go. That's probably the best way to go about it. And it's going to definitely be a crapshoot, because I feel like I don't know if NFL teams really got an opportunity to see much for prospects when it came to the draft, but the Cavs, especially in like any NBA team, they're going in off highlight reels and tapes. That's it. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a real crapshoot this year. So, yeah, I guess that's a good way to go about it for everyone listening. Just have faith in Kobe Altman, and hopefully he has the right direction and idea of what to do next with this team.
And don't get mad at me if it doesn't work out.
There you go. Yeah.
I really want the draft lottery though. The NFL draft was like more fun than I had any right to be.
You had fun
partially because of the insane things people had going on in their homes. Like shouts to Mike Vrabel and Connor Roy himself, Kyle Kingsbury. But I want the draft lottery. I don't know if you guys remember the story about how like MGK went with Dan Gilbert and like Nick Gilbert, and they got like trashed and were just like great. Like they were like all the rest of the NBA was pissed that they were like celebrating so hard when they won the lottery. I want like the Zoom call version of that, but I want to stop this Kid Cudi erasure and get Kid Cudi involved in this. That's my only request.
Ooh, I like it.
Two things. One, Kid Cudi really got screwed along with Aaron Paul in the season of Westbrook. Chris, you haven't watched yet. And two, the year the Cavs got the Anthony Bennett pick, a friend of mine from high school won a random Twitter contest with Dan Gilbert and was in the crowd with Dan, Nick, MGK, and a couple other people from the Cavs organization. And then they drafted Anthony Bennett, and I hold that over Roy's head every day until the day we die. Like, he got married not too long ago, and yeah, just remind him, like, you brought this upon the organization. You are the curse, so there you go. Maybe they need to send you, Chris, just you could be the straight guy in the room.
Yeah, it is what it is. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to have you on for a second part episode, but give everyone just a plug on social, podcast, everything. Just give everyone a quick plug as we wrap up here.
Oh, sure. So you can follow me on Twitter at BirdsEyeView. And then also me and my ladies do a podcast called That's What B Said. Typically comes out on Wednesdays. You know, with the whole coronavirus thing, we've sort of been trying out different things and different ways of content. So we're not on the regular schedule now, but it's a Cleveland sports podcast. We focus a lot on the Browns just because that seems to be the most popular thing. And most of our followers are Browns first, everything else second. But yeah, doing stuff like this is fun for me because I don't really get to talk about the Cavs that much.
Good.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very, very much for coming on.